Welcome to the Get Together.
All over the world, there are people thinking about and creating a future of live digital events and performances.
They're disparate innovators who are artists, tech founders, nonprofits, and investors, and they need a place to gather and share ideas.
That's what the Get Together is all about.
I'm Jess, a theater creator who loves bringing people together around technology, art, and the internet.
And I'm Joe, a tech and media startup vet with over 10 years of experience growing and operating businesses.
Thanks for getting together with us. Let's dig in. We graduated our sophomore year today. When we're recording this.
Yeah. It's sophomore year. So we, freshman year was work from home.
Yep.
Sophomore year was in the dorms. E.g. our
the
co-working
yard.
Space.
With our friend, casting director Jason Stiers, as our bunkmate.
I really like thinking about the yard as dorms.
It's really good. It's really what it feels like.
Especially recently as, you know, the world comes back to some sense of normalcy. It's been a zoo in that office.
It certainly has.
And it's so wild to, like, look back across the year of being there and how quiet it started to what a party it's become.
It is. That's true. Last summer when we moved in, so we basically, you probably know this if you've been listening, but we were both sort of got our second vaccinations at the end of April. And then we're like, let's go. We're on the hunt for office space. Can't sit in our apartments anymore. When we first moved in, it was quiet here.
Yeah, it was beautiful. It's one of those things that you didn't know that you needed to appreciate while it was happening, where we could just go camp any conference room, wander into any phone booth, cough wherever we want.
That's true. It's like we instantly owned a full floor office space that was just like all ours.
Yeah, it was pretty dreamy. And yeah. I won't lie, it's fun to have people back in, to have things happening in the space, and mm-hmm. For the free cookies that show up every once in a while.
Half randomly. A cupcake yesterday.
Yeah, not sad about those things.
That's silly. Well, I thought maybe today would be fun to do a little year in review. They say, I think you've pointed this out, that your sophomore your second year as a company is a tough one historically. And I certainly think I can speak on behalf of us that we found that to be true. But we also found a lot of joy and had a lot of wins and a lot of really cool things happen across this last year. And so, yeah, I wondered if you'd be down to do a little roses and thorns 2021-2022 for our sophomore year.
Let's hit it. It's so nice to, have survived. Are we allowed to say that? Are we allowed to look at it in the past as having survived the sophomore slump?
I think so, because tell me what you think about this. I think it is a detriment, and I feel like I have been disserved by an idea that in America, if you have a brilliant idea and you do the work and you teach yourself how to run a business, it is somehow like a thing that will happen just, magically for you. And this shit's so fucking hard. Like, it's really, really fucking hard. I think we have to tell the truth about that, right?
It's such a grind. It's really hard. Actually, I was thinking, could I start with just like a few bullets about that, like, concept of a sophomore slump inside of a startup, inside of a new business, inside of an organization that gets founded and started on a hope and a dream and some hard work and some excitement and some whatever.
Too much coffee,
yeah. But then, like, at some point, reality, which, like, it feels rude to call it reality because, like, the starting of the business was also in reality, but, like, the hardships start to come into play. And, the sophomore slump is really defined by the meeting of all that excitement that was the founding seed of the business with the hardships of actually running the business and the changes and the pivots that you've had to make across time, and that feeling of, losing authenticity. Like, if you're moving even slightly away from that original seed of an idea and seed of a vision, which you have to do, that is just part of running a business.
Yep. But like, another fallacy that's propagated.
Yeah.
It's not going to say the same.
What the hell are we even doing? You're like, we're just like reacting and moving and pivoting, and then, you're disconnected from that original feeling. And I think that's a big part of that emotional response to the software slump, which is, again, it's a reaction to reality, and it's a good thing. It's just, it's a hard thing. It's a hard reality to face.
Yeah.
But that one feels like the most real to me. And, you know, there's other, like, more tangible things of just, like, you're doing more different things, right? You're mm-hmm. forced to break outside of your comfort zone and expand into new partnerships and new relationships, which can be really fun and exciting, but it's hard. It takes mental energy. It's taxing. Mm-hmm. They, you know, those partnerships fail, or, you know, they mm-hmm. go well, or they don't. And all that stuff is just, like, it weighs emotionally, and it's a very big mental lift, again, to be shifting outside of that original execution of that original idea and that original runway that you sort of had for yourself and mm-hmm. into now this new territory, which just new always takes the brain a bit more time to process. So the mental load, it's real.
I like that frame up a lot. And I mean, it gives us a chance to pause, I think, and also celebrate ourselves and anyone else who sort of was in the same boat as us at the same time, that like a year ago, right, today, we had not only the existing construct of sophomore slump that you just described sort of in play, but we also had this secondary layer of change because the ecosystem we built our business for was during COVID, right? So it wasn't the same thing even that we started out doing 10 years ago and why we started out doing it. And back to like an early newsletter we wrote last year, right, about how like we observed that a lot of people in the product adoption curve sort of like were forced to be early adopters. And that was the source of a ton of our business and what we, the infrastructure we built in 2020 to 2021. Then everything changed as people started going back in the world. And it wasn't that the need or the reason we were here changed too much, but there was this swing of adjustment, right, to not being in our houses anymore and having some grab at some semblance of whatever we thought was normal before COVID hit. And so like a year ago, our entry into sophomore slump not only was just like normal, oh, the grind is real, it was like, oh God, all the business went away because people can get out of their houses. And I distinctly remember that sort of grappling with, is this over? Like, will people forget that we do need to include digital audiences and things, that it is profitable, that it can grow your business? Will they forget that in the face of walking out their doors again?
Yeah. Wait, I want to ask you a question on that. Did you in that moment think, like, did you believe that businesses and audiences would come back, and that, you know, the version of the business that we have now where brands and organizations are accepting of and maybe even excited about their digital audiences and wanting to engage them through digital means in addition to in-person means. Like, did you believe that that was going to come back?
No, I don't think so. I think, or rather than, let's put it this way. I think this is more accurate. This is so informed by just like the things that have happened to me in my life, but I have a very good understanding for and healthy respect also for the fact that I just don't know shit about life, you know, and that I can't control it. Mm-hmm. So I also, by way of that, have like a pretty, it's a coping mechanism probably as a leader, right? Like I have a pretty attuned like beacon that goes off that when that stuff happens, it says, this could not come back. This could not happen. I could have believed 100%. I know what I'm talking about. I know what I made. I know it's valuable and it might not matter. And that, I really thought that in June, July last year. Like, it was, yeah, just understanding and believing, trying to make peace with maybe a little more, right? Hmm. The idea that, like, maybe this isn't going to work.
That's interesting. I don't think I knew or picked up on it in that way that you're describing. Because, like, from my side, I don't think I felt the same way. I think I did have a like, true and genuine belief in the value of what we had done during the pandemic mm-hmm. and the long-term value and the connection to those audiences and the desire and need to continue to engage people digitally. Like, you know, just me as a consumer of digital goods and live digital things. I'm like, mm-hmm. no, I still want that. Like, I still want that. I want the organizations that I want to be part of to give me that. And I thought that that feeling was going to be true. And it has turned out, I think, to be pretty true. A lot of organizations have sort of come back to us and said, hey, you know those people that we found yeah. on the internet? We like them. We want to keep them.
Yeah, no, look, the way I feel this year going into, again, like summer months that seem to, at least right now, be a little quieter than the rest of our year, I feel night and day different. Because last year, what I think is true, I want to say I'm really glad you felt that way. I definitely didn't at all. But the going into it last year, what I do think is true is that there was no way to see what was going to happen in June, because everything just went away and there's no precedent for this and there's no patterns you can look at. And so I really felt unable to use all the tools I've cultivated across my career to look into the future and try to make bets on which way the wind is going to blow there. It felt like none of those tools were available last summer. And it's night and day from this year, where I can see all the pockets of interest and how people are starting to assemble the value in their heads of digital audiences and live digital work. And I don't know exactly what's going to pan out across all those pockets of interest, but I certainly like at least can see the places where we can sort of put pressure on, you know, and try to help inside of.
Yeah. And that's so interesting to frame it that way. It feels like what that brings up in me is this idea of just like how many times we had to change across the past 2 years, because what was needed, what was wanted, what was possible was also changing. So building up infrastructure for purely digital things when we knew, like, actually, like, a hybrid world is pretty cool, pretty awesome, works pretty well. But, oh, we can't do that just yet, so let's do the digital thing. And while you and I and, like, the amazing crew of people that we work with are willing to put in the extra effort and to experiment and to break things and to fail and to succeed, I feel like a lot of our clients didn't have the same resolve. And, you know, back to people being forced to jump over that chasm from sort of like the early majority to actually early adopter. Once that need to jump that chasm was gone, they were like, great, I'm going to sit comfortably here and wait it out until the standards are set and the behaviors are here. And, like, that was really like a frustrating shift. And I think that's what that was last summer, was people being like, oh, I can afford currently to just ignore all that stuff that's been plaguing me. I'm going to do that. And we just had to kind of wait them out. Wait them out to realize that, okay, that isn't the way forward. Like, ignoring and closing, you know, closing our eyes and our ears is not going to be the way forward.
I wanted to pull it back to something you were saying earlier that I thought you brought up recently. And I thought it was really interesting because I don't have the same experience as you on this, and wondered if you could talk a little more about it. I remember you said sort of offhand at some point recently that you were frustrated because you, in your startup land that you came from, you know, there was capital, so you could make a plan and you could stick to it. And I remember being really struck by that because, like, I have literally never been able to do that in my whole career. And so, like, I think that's so, like, I just didn't understand or even realize those two experiences that we were both going through across this last year. And thought that was really interesting. And so for other people that are like me, right, who have always bootstrapped something and are always seeing, you know, things that are hard for other people to see and trying to make it happen, I wondered if you would talk a little bit more about, like, what it is like to be able to have a budget and to make a plan and execute on it and gather data and all of those good things. And maybe a little more on what it's been like for you across this year to step into, you know, something that's closer to, like, what I've been dealing with my whole life.
Yeah, for sure. I want to zoom out and talk macroeconomics for a second. For those who don't know, I majored in math and economics, and I force them into conversations every once in a while. But, like, from a macroeconomic perspective, so just, like, the economy as a whole, and as a lot of people are experiencing right now, like, unpredictability is, like, detrimental to successful economies. Like, being able to reliably take bets that you believe will pay off in the future is, like, key to the success and the stability of an economy. And so that's why the Fed tries to keep inflation at a certain level, because if you don't know what the value of the money is going to be in the near future, then you hedge your bets against it, you know, if you think it's going to be risky or something like that. And I think that's when I think now in this micro world of just, like, a startup that I've worked in, like, what that infusion of cash up front does is provides a level of stability and predictability so that you can make a plan, make strategic investments, and execute on those without just having to react to external shocks that require you to go find more money just to survive. So that's like such a huge difference between the worlds that I've operated in the past versus how we operate now in a more bootstrap fashion, where we can have the best of plans, but in a pinch situation where we can't wait for one of those plans to mature, one of those investments to mature, then we actually have to abandon it. And that's like just so hard and so rough. Mm-hmm. And we are now, regardless of whether or not we're far ahead, if we can't actually execute on it, if we can't take steps 1, 2, and 3 to get to step 4 that we can see, then like someone else is going to now beat us to it because we're over here, you know, just producing random Zoom events to stay alive. Mm-hmm. So I view it through that sort of economic lens of just how detrimental instability is to the health of a business. Mm-hmm. I think there's some positives of like, I think we're more willing to drop bad ideas or not even bad ideas, ideas that are proving not to work. Mm-hmm. Good ideas that prove not to work. We drop them probably a bit more quickly than a startup might. But that sort of instability, I think, is really, really rough inside of a business. Because mm-hmm. you can't predict, you can't plan, and you're forced to give up on good ideas if they aren't short-term cash flow positive. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Which is just like, it's super frustrating to be like, I have a dream, I've got a vision, I have the plan to execute it, but we've got to put it on the shelf. Mm-hmm. And by the time we come back to it, maybe we're no longer ahead. Mm-hmm. Or maybe the market has changed in such a way that we maybe could have influenced the changes in how people are, engaging with digital communities or producing digital events mm-hmm. that we just had no say in, or we had no sort of no role in shaping because we were forced out of it by a mm-hmm. need to just survive. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Which, like, if you want to get real philosophical in like a capitalist society, like this applies all the way down to the individual human level, right? And like things like universal basic income attempt to address a thing like this, where it's mm-hmm. like, how much more, you know, quote unquote productive could we be? How much more utility could be brought into our world if people just had a baseline of stability and didn't have to like just struggle day in and day out for the simple things like shelter, like food. And I think that argument is really good. I'm a fan of at least the theory of universal basic income. It hasn't been tested enough to like know if it works on a macro scale, but I mean, we should be aiming at a goal like that of a baseline of stability for every single person in our country. Like, what else are we doing here mm-hmm. if it's not to make sure everyone here has like a baseline of health and happiness.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So in non-economic terms, like how, like personally, how did you feel going through all of this, like coming from the stable environment, stable quote unquote, and into this environment in particular this year that feels like this has been much more of a roller coaster up and down than the first year?
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's been super frustrating to be dependent on things that are outside of our control. And there's like a whole bunch of things we can't control. There's a whole bunch of things that we do. I do believe that we take a lot of actions that sort of shape and control our destiny, as it were. Mm-hmm. But the number of times we've been, you know, quote unquote, saved by some client being like, hi, come do a thing with us. We have a need. But they're the ones, you know, with the money and then therefore mm-hmm. the power and the stability. And do I believe we would have found that money that saved us somewhere else? You know, back to like us having agency, back to us having control over destiny. I do believe so. Mm-hmm. But that doesn't change the feeling and the fact that, you know, our business was saved externally by someone else mm-hmm. coming and saying, hi, I want to do a thing with you. Right. Mm-hmm. And they want to do a thing with us because we're great and we do good work. And like, that's also a thing that we control. But like, there's too much out of our control in that world.
Yeah.
And that makes me really uncomfortable and really sometimes just like annoyed. And I'm like, what the fuck? Like, why is it so hard? Like, yeah. Why does this have to be so hard? I mean, what about you? How from, you know, what I'm describing, how is it different from how you felt throughout all of this? Like, given that mm-hmm. what you're saying is like, this is the environment that you've sort of been in or built yourself, you know, multiple times in the past. And so I'm curious, like, did this one feel substantially different than past adventures, projects, you know, situations that you were in and or built yourself?
I think so, but because even though, well, I've been forced into that situation, right? But it's not how my brain actually works, like as I'm sure is evident from nearly everything I've ever done. I think pretty big, right? And I build for the long term. So there's even, this is such a silly example, but there's like a a dance festival in my college town that still exists that I created the infrastructure for. You know, that's like a very specific, like off-campus, interesting, interdisciplinary, you know, kind of approach to a dance festival. And it's 20 years later, and that thing is still there because, like, that's how I put bones together, or at least I try. You know what I mean?
That's interesting. Wait, can I stop you there for a second? I don't think I know about this dance festival.
Yeah, it's called Choreocopia.
Are you still involved with it?
Or like, no,
when
not
did
at all.
You?
The only thing
who
I did
it
was
over?
Each year the kids that are in the program take it. So it was like it was a response to us not being able to participate in the dance concert if we weren't dance majors.
So we
created a couple other friends helped me create the artistic side of it. You know, an off-campus dance concert called Choreocopia, where musical theater people choreographed it and dancers choreographed it. And then we actually attached it to I created a scholarship in our university's foundation for a friend of ours who died in a car wreck. And it still raises money every year for that scholarship foundation, which is super cool. Yeah. So the reason I bring that up is like, and same thing at the Give Back concert, right? Like, yes, it was an idea and a thought that no one had ever put together, but like the bones were there to make sure it survived and could grow and sort of flex and evolve. And at least as I understand it, that's like what people are looking for in entrepreneurs, right? And particularly investable entrepreneurs. So I think where this was not different for me from my past experiences and not so different from you is like I thought a year ago today we were going to get money for the first time, right? When we were going to build some technology. Like I really was like my brain was like, we're going to get some stability to work inside of. So it's not been like super different to have to do this, but it's felt frustrating because I thought we were going to get money. You know, I thought we were going to be stable.
Mm-hmm. Oh, wouldn't it be nice?
Yeah. Yeah.
Can I ask you a question on the heels of that dance festival and the Give Back concert? So what are the things, as you were building that dance festival and you say like, I'm looking into the future, like I want this thing to be around in 20 years. And maybe at that time you didn't say I want it to be 20 years, but you were thinking towards the future like you always do. Like what does that actually look like in the moment? Like when you're executing, when you're building, like how do you build for the future?
A clear definable reason it exists that is mission-based, i.e. anyone can find themselves inside that, see themselves inside that. Really strong admin infrastructure. So like a paper trail of processes and records of who helped and just like good recording and admin around it. A structure that allows, an artistic structure that allows for flexibility because things have to change every year, and as new people get involved, it has to be able to change with them and their thoughts and visions. So that's another one. And a strong referral program built into how it works, like, i.e., I'm always making sure, and I think this is very specifically a product of having been bootstrapped, right? I don't know that you have to do this in startup land, but like, always building a group of people who are helping to build it, who will refer new people into it, you know, so that the infinite game exists, right?
Literally have this next to me right now.
Yeah.
That's a reference to James P. Carse's Finite and Infinite Games, A Vision of Life as Play and Possibility. It's a great book that's real confusing to read.
So I'm sure there's other things, but those are like four things that come to mind right off the top of my bat that are like defaults in my brain. Not that I ever would have been able to define those for you before the last 2 years, you know what I mean? But
yeah,
those are definitely how I think about things.
That's cool. I like the that like last one I hadn't thought about. Like referral means something in my brain over here.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, kind of low level, kind of cheesy incentivization to send your link out to convince your friends to also download this addictive app or whatever. Like it's been co-opted into this other thing. But the word that pops in my head is almost like creating evangelists, like the people who are involved to it are so impacted by the mission, you know, by the artisanal creation of cool content or whatever. I don't know why artisanal popped, that they become evangelists for it.
Mm-hmm.
And Yeah, that's so cool to think about as a way of spreading, you know, quote unquote, word of mouth.
Yeah.
Because I feel like, yeah, mission driven has long been a thing in tech startup land.
Mm-hmm.
And it's almost become like a joking, derisive thing where it's like, oh, you're a mission based organization? Right. So you're parading a mission to trick people into paying you money. Got it.
Yeah.
But to come back to actually being mission driven and to come back to then the impact that that mission has on both the people who are involved in executing that mission, but then, you know, the people who are part of what that mission serves.
Yeah.
And through that mission, actually creating, yeah, your evangelists and the yeah, referral structure that comes from those people.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not a referral structure just to download apps, you know?
No. No. No, and actually probably embedded in your good point about evangelism is that maybe we add a fifth thing to this, which is like building ownership into the thing, right? Because people become evangelists because a piece of them is a part of it, right? And so I think that's a thing that's always been a part of all of the things that I've built over the years or built with other people. And I certainly think that's a great part of, you know, the work we've done across the last couple of years. Like every day, any given day, we're getting into documents and processes and thoughts and ideas that were contributed by other people working for us, you know, who were inventing this future right alongside us.
Yeah. Oh, I've got another question for you. Another look back to look forward question. Do you think if you went back to this dance festival 20 years on and you plugged back in, you know, as an evangelist, as a volunteer, as someone who's just helping to make it happen, do you think it would be, how recognizable do you think it would be from the version that you created 20 years ago?
I hope unrecognizable, right?
Yeah.
Because like the spirit is the only thing that really matters, right? And the thing that is ubiquitous across time, which really is just anyone who wants to should get together and dance. The end, right? Like that's the distillation from the problem we solved that first year, was we were not being allowed to like be a part of dancing on stage or choreographing on stage.
That's cool. I now want to like see, you know, the 5-minute documentary of this dance festival and the people and the changes that were made across those 20 years to take it from that seed of an idea that was a response to something, that was a reaction to, you know, being prevented from participating, to now whatever version of it is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's funny. I think like, and looking into, as you say, our next year, you know, something that obviously is coming up for us that we haven't made decisions on yet is it's the Give Back concert coming back. And I don't know why I've been thinking about this a lot this year. Like I actually like really believe in that 5-year rotation kind of sort of strategy inside nonprofit boards that exists not all the time, but a lot of the time.
Can you talk about that? I don't think I know what that is.
A healthy board, right, is served by people not spending more than 5 years in their role because it lets new things be invented, new lenses come in. And like, I feel that way about the Give Back concert. I think maybe I've been thinking about this because of Miscast, which we're working on right now, which you'd have to have been living in a hole if you didn't know that from this podcast. We haven't stopped talking about it.
Bit.ly / Miscast 22.
Yeah.
You can actually, by the time this comes out, it'll be over, no, but whatever.
Yeah.
Go click the link.
But I think it's time for the Give Back concert to change from what it was, like particularly the artistic format. There's too much that's changed. There's too many new ideas. There's like, even I think Jermaine's talked about this on the podcast before, even the reason we host it is because no one else could explain what the fuck was going on that stage, you know, with people remoting in and all that. That's totally different now, right? Anybody could host this concert. And so I think like it's time for a really big change for the Give Back concert that ostensibly like doesn't have to require me, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know what the answer to that is. I have zero idea. But I'm excited. Like,
no, I was just gonna say, it sounds like we're taking host recommendations for the next iteration of the Give Back concert. So
yeah, totally.
If you want to throw your hat in the ring, you should tweet at Jess.
You'll have to fight Jermaine though, probably.
What if Jermaine? I don't want to relegate Jermaine to digital host, but like I think like the idea that you've talked about of like having
in
person host and digital host.
Yeah, he'd be so good.
He'd be so good.
Okay.
Flip through backgrounds. It'd be so funny.
Oh my God. So stupid. Flip through them. He'll have them all planned out. He'll have 16 outfit changes every time we go back to him on the screen. Just bookmark this podcast because I guarantee you this is going to happen.
Wait, like, and that also, that's one of those ideas, right? That's only possible in that way digitally, right? Like
the bit, you mean?
Yeah, like he could, like in the same way that Kate Baldwin changed outfits a number of times through Amplify, but like the limits on that are a bit higher because it's physical space and there's just like, not much, but like if he's just shown from the top up and he can change his digital background, he can change every second he needs to.
Yeah, it's cool, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Like, even that wasn't possible before when we created the Give Back concert, you know? Mm-hmm. I don't know. I'm excited. So it's with our last bits of minutes, like, give me three highs, three of the highest highs of the last year in our work from you.
Oh, my goodness. This is my not least favorite, because that's not right. I enjoy this. This is the thing I'm worst at. Is being put on the spot, and like, you didn't put me on the spot, but like having unprepared and someone asking me like a specific question like that requires, very specifically, requires going back into my memory and pulling things out of it. Just like something about the way that my brain works, it just does not happen. Like,
I'm so sorry.
A blank. I do have one. So one of my highest highs was when we made the decision in the summer into the fall of 2021 that we actually wanted to invent a new form of part-time seasonal employment that was born of the theater world, born of part-time nonsense,
born of labor laws in New York City.
Born of labor laws in New York City. Right now, if you are hiring and employing 1099 contractors, you should read up on what is or isn't an employee. But making the decision to bring on a team of specifically four people that are amazing, wonderful, brilliant humans that we had worked with a ton across the previous year, but saying, hey, we are in a position to actually provide stability through a number of events and shows and projects that we were working on, and we got to offer those people and ask those people to help us execute on these projects. And it was just really cool to take this thing that did feel unstable, not unstable, but just like didn't have the same stability as I wanted, and to be able to push it into a position of, okay, we know what the next 6 months is going to look like, and because of that, we can make all these other decisions that included bringing on this team to work across a number, I think it was like six shows in total, and that was like really cool to be able to like project that far out, 6 months, whoa. to have a plan, to execute on that plan, to have that plan go pretty successfully. Some changes across it, as you were saying. All good things must change. Mm-hmm. But that was a high, because it reflected the growth and development of those people and our relationship with those people, right? We, you know, kind of all were forged in the fire together across that first year. Mm-hmm. And then this was like, okay, we did all the hard stuff. Now let's just execute. Now let's just get it done. And for our business, it was cool to have that pretty consistent flow of people coming to us and saying, hey, we want to work with you again. Or, hey, we heard you're awesome and we want to work with you. And us to be like, yep, we've got our A team right here, ready to go.
It's a good one.
Yeah, top that. I'll give you a minute.
You have two more. You're not done.
Oh, it was three?
Yes.
Oh, see, I told you I forgot the question.
Oh my God. I said it twice already.
I know. I was going deep in my head to try to find these memories and not listening to the full question. I do think, we already did address it a little bit, so this is kind of cheating, but it is true in my heart. The graduating from working in living rooms to having a physical office space, it's one of those things that like the tangible sort of makes it real in a way that it hadn't been before. And you know, in the the commitment to the business that comes with signing a contract that says, hi, I am committing under penalty of law.
You're making me stressed out just talking about it.
Yeah. to pay you money for X number of months into the future, right? And those sorts of things, again, back to planning, back to stability. that's an investment of money, of personal capital, of personal mental health into this thing because we had faith in the business. And now a year on of being in that space, in that little box in the sky, that was a really cool moment, not only just to get us out of our apartments, but to sort of, put a stake in the business and say, this is really, really real.
Oh, that's a good one. That's a good number two.
God, I'm just killing it.
You're nailing it.
All right, I'm going to stick with humans. My brain is on John Tomlinson right now. Right? And I think, like, it is the people. I don't know how you have to distill it down, but I think of John Tomlinson, I think of Laura Ivey, I think of these people that I've been, like, so lucky to meet because of this business, because of your connections, because of all of it, because of the work that we do, that I'm, like, awed and inspired by. Like, I think Laura Ivey is the fucking coolest. Like, it just is. And, like, I still get, like, a little nervous in, like, meetings with her because I'm like, I want Laura to like me. So I'm so grateful to have met those people because they are so smart and hardworking and capable and invested in us in a way that makes all those other things, like, super valuable. I have learned things from Laura, from John Tomlinson, you know, negotiation tactics from John Tomlinson. He could do a masterclass.
Seriously.
And, you know, just the sort of the tone and the sentiment that Laura brings into any and all meetings and her ability to manage issues and bring people together and, like, wow, she's so, so good at so many things. But that's, like, one that really sticks with me of how she handles moments of crisis, because, like, they happen all the time.
Yep.
And she is sort of cool as a cucumber and is like, cool, let's come up with a solution together. And I just I love that. And I think she like represents that so well. And it's something that I think about whenever we're in moments of crisis. I'm like, okay, first order of business, fix the problem. Then we can point fingers. Then we can, you know, deal with everything else.
I like distinctly remember at Amplify when shit was going very, very badly with our technology during the day. And I'm trying to remember the exact order of how it happened, but you were up with us, and I don't know if you asked me what can I do, like what can you do to help or whatever. And I remember like going down that Laura Ivey checklist, and I was like, okay, first let's step away from this, you and I. And then I remember saying, it's like one of those rare moments where it's like, I actually do not know what to do, because I can always bullshit something, you know what I mean? But boy, did I not know what to do in that moment. And like standing at that bar with you and trying to just like step through our possibilities, even though there was this clock crunching down on us because we were running out of time, you know? Laura Ivey. Who? And same with that. Laura Ivey handled it like a feckin' pro.
So, props to Laura Ivey. And we'll be starting a fan Instagram shortly.
Oh, I love that. So getting to hire a group of people for the equivalent, basically, of part-time employees, moving into an office as a distillation of stepping forward in our business, and then all of the humans interactions that you've been able to have with folks that you've met through the work across this last year, in particular this last year.
Yeah
I like it.
Yeah, wow, those are incredible. I'm so good at this game.
I don't even know what to say to you.
Keep it in, cut it out, do whatever you like.
They're very good.
Well, so what do you got? I hope at least one of yours is an event, because there have been so many great events.
That's true.
And I skipped all of them with mine.
I know. Two of mine are events, I think. It's hard to choose. There's just like so much cool shit that's happened this year. But I will say my first one is Freestyle Love Supreme live at the Waldorf. There are many reasons. As one of my favorite things of this last year, but I will pick two. One was just the accomplishment of putting a bunch of women on stage inside a Broadway property that is almost all male dominated. There's a lot of rooms where that would have been, the kabosh would have been put on it pretty quickly, you know what I mean? So for us to be able to push that through and with our everyone who helped make that possible, mm-hmm. just was really, really meaningful, I think. Yeah. And like a little glimpse into a better future, you know?
Yeah. Oh, that is such a good one. I like too that, like, yeah, the people that were part of that property, like, were open to the idea.
Absolutely.
Like, they didn't fight us on
it. Yeah, 100%. Mm-hmm. No, that was super cool. And the other thing about that particular show was that it, I think I've told this story before, but, you know, I just recently told it somewhere. In 2013, when we started the Give Back concert, and so, you know, I think my first meeting was in January of 2013, because I had had this idea in December in the LAX parking garage, came back to New York and was like, I have this idea to do this crazy thing. And everybody kind of nodded at me with glazed eyes, like mm-hmm. my friends and collaborators, the people from CBTC. But I was so lucky that everyone sort of trusted me and let me go with it.
Yeah.
And there was that moment in that first concert when the MSU kids came up on screen and all the Broadway people were on stage and they talked to each other and there was a gasp in the audience, yeah. right? And I think it was Susan Zanarios who had founded CBTC, because all of a sudden everybody was like, oh, that's what she's been describing.
Mm-hmm.
And oh my God,
people, it wasn't just a fever dream.
Yeah, exactly. And people are coming together from all around the world around this idea that we have to support survivors, right? It was this like crazy moment that I will never forget. And to me, Freestyle Love Supreme at the Waldorf felt a little bit like that gasp for our second round, our second act of, you know, this work. Mm-hmm. It was that moment where we were able to invite 50, you know, folks who knew about what we were doing, but had never really experienced it, and certainly not in a hybrid format, because we were just let out of the house 2 months, you know, before.
Let out of the house is the hilarious. Yeah. Such a good way to put that.
Ungrounded.
Yeah.
Got ungrounded. And I remember watching all of these colleagues and friends that we know as the first time the words popped up for foundations from people's apps, and feeling that this was our second act gasp. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Ooh, what's our next gasp going to be?
I don't know. It's too much pressure. I have no idea. So much pressure. Let you know. Stay tuned. So that's my first one. I think my second one I'd have to say is actually getting asked to the Hopin team asking you and I to speak a couple weeks ago.
That one's coming in right under the wire over that 1 year. 1 year
I know,
look back.
But it still happened in the year. And really, the reason I've spoken a lot of shit in my life, you know what I mean? It's not like that's particularly unusual, but it does feel like this hard fucking work we have done to try to sell a big vision, execute small steps, just get people to see a future in which this supports their bottom line, their stakeholders, their mission.
Mm-hmm.
Being asked to speak at the Hopin thing felt like the first domino starting to fall, you know, in some ways, with like people really valuing what we have just done with blood, sweat, and tears. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Like, I just want to like sit in the memory of that one and be like, it's like a, it's kind of a hug, kind of a slap, because it was like, you know, people hadn't been valuing, hadn't seen it in the same way, but.
As long as they come around, right?
Yeah, they're coming around.
Yeah. And the idea, too, I think that, like, our perspective on it, which is not an events professional perspective, is valued and is valuable in that conversation that this giant, you know, highly valued technology company is having to have. That was pretty cool, too, I thought.
Yeah. Yeah, and to see them catch up is the wrong word. But, like, put emphasis on the things that we've been talking about for a while.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I mean, I guess there's a pattern with all three of mine, which are really just reflections of like and affirmations that the hard work was worth it.
Mm-hmm.
Miscast is absolutely my top number one thing of the year, because I mean, I don't know, you may not have ever experienced this, but like I am worried all the time that like my bet's wrong. You know what I mean? Because, like, mm-hmm. I mean, it happens all the time with you and I. Half the time I say things and you're like, I don't know what you're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's the deal. And it also means that I have a high, like, I'm playing a high-risk game of being wrong. You know what I mean? And kind of the point where we started at. Like, that was a moment last summer where I was like, uh-oh, was I wrong? could have been wrong about this, you know, mm-hmm. could have really thought I saw it one way, that it's not going to play out. And miscast having driven so many registrations, having made so much money for them at such a good margin, having brought so much joy to people who will never be able to be in that room, having birthed new donors, new stewards, new possible ticket holders who will get in that room in mm-hmm. the future, having experimented with what it means to create a hybrid experience and like fucking nailed it as far as I'm concerned. Mm-hmm. Seeing all of this, just like, I'm just so proud.
Yeah. It's really cool to, now 3 years on, this is our third miscast.
Oh yeah, so it's a good start to our third year too.
Yeah, and to see, I know I'm back to my stepping stones of, you know, the past to the future through the present, mm-hmm. and it's like, yeah, we haven't yet gotten to the fact or the idea that digital attendees will be next year's in-person attendees, mm-hmm. right? But like we've been seeing that for years, mm-hmm. but it took many steps, right? Yeah. And that now the fourth step is going to be the proving of those thousands of people who joined us virtually last year. How many of them are going to like fight for tickets in person?
Yeah.
Because they, you know, I don't know, were converted down the funnel.
Mm-hmm.
And so yeah, seeing that step and having miscast be comfortable taking that step with us.
Yeah, very grateful. And also grateful to them for having their own foresight and vision that we didn't even have, right? Like, I feel like they are great partners in that way, in this crazy, crazy startup without startup stability, even though the concept of startup stability is hilarious, but you know what I mean? It's a little more stable than what we got.
It comes 12 to 18 months at a time.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I have to say, it's been a hard year, but it's been a good one, and I would love to hear from anyone else who's been riding their own roller coaster alongside us. We find that it always helps to make it feel like we're not doing it alone, and you know, we'd be remiss in not saying this podcast has been a big part of a really, really good year, and a part of the reason it's been a really good year, because we gotten to chat with all of you all and each other each of these weeks.
Yeah, I really appreciate getting to reflect each week on this.
That was a great episode of the podcast, and a good one to launch us into year three.
Let's go year three. And yeah, as always, we want you to share this podcast. So do you know anyone who is running a business or is just having a hard time and needs a little digital hug? Send them this.
We'll be here. I'm Jess.
And I'm Joe.
And we'll see you next week. Bye.